Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Because I'm looking right now at that and When you tell it, like, I remember back in the 80s when I got my first home computer, and I'm thinking 8K memory, wow, it was amazing. And then 6 years later, I got an Atari ST, 801 meg memory, wow, amazing. And now I'm looking back now, and I'm thinking, those days, what we expected to get computers, different to what we're getting now. And if someone says to me, one day we're going to get 1 terabyte memory in the computer, I wouldn't be surprised.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's already exists someplace, and you and I may just not have heard of it. The technology, I remember, whenever I'm looking at buying a new laptop or a new PC for home, the amount of times when I've phoned up, we've ordered one online, and by the time it arrives and you're buying it online, it's not the one you ordered, because the one you ordered had actually been surpassed by technology advancement, and you get something better. The pace of technology change is an absolute nowadays.
Yeah, because I can remember back in 2010, I think, around 10, I bought myself a laptop. And I thought at the time it was a bee's knees, so it was a great brand. I thought it was going to do well. But after about a couple of years, it started getting noisy. The fan was noisy. And I later found out it was because the CPU in the computer was designed to only work on a desktop.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, fine. So I said, I'm going to go and replace. So I went and replaced it and bought another PC. And that was going fine, but it was Windows 8, which I didn't like, then 8.1. I preferred Windows. I love Windows 7. I thought, don't like 8.1. Finally, I put in the Windows 10 because I thought Windows 10 was great. After 6 months, it slowed down so much. And more or less, it was telling me, oh, it's time you bought a new computer, because basically it's slowing down. So I said, okay, fine. So I spent basically roughly around another year on 2 laptops in about 5 years. I thought, okay, it's fine. I said, okay, buy a new laptop. So I went and bought a Mac. I've had a Mac now 5 years and no issues.
Yeah, and technology, is it disposable? Well, you've mentioned throughout the podcast, Ronan, that your new iPhone 12, and I think to many people, technology has become disposable. It's a new white goods in people's house, where there's almost an acceptance that either every 12 to 18 months you'll get a new smartphone, every 2 to 2.5 years you'll probably get a new laptop. The key is how we actually engender, and going back to why I think cloud adoption has become so prevalent, over the past, 12 to 18 months, is people look at cloud and they see the probably the closest and truest concept of evergreen computing.
Yeah.
We've taken that need for continual upgrade away. The onus on evergreen status is now with the public cloud service provider.
Yeah.
And for an organization, they can simply move to a perspective where they're consuming a capability rather than having to pay for the continual upgrade of that capability. Now, they are paying for it in a way, because they're paying part of their subscription fees and charges are to pay for those upgrades to take place.
Yeah.
But the onus and responsibility of the upgrade has been removed from them. And that has so many parallels to how the traditional home consumer operates.
Yeah, I remember years ago when you bought a phone, and every so often when you replaced it, you had to make sure that you didn't use SIM card, because all your data was stored in a SIM card. Now it's stored in the cloud. When you go to get a new phone, you get your new phone and you sign into your cloud service provider, and it downloads all your data. So what you got is everything you had before in a shiny new body.
Yeah, and the speed of transfer and everything. I remember the last time I got a new phone, it was literally put the two phones beside each other.
Yeah.
5 minutes later, done. No transfer of data. It was literally, are you transferring from this phone to this phone? Yes. Do you want to wipe the old phone? Yes. Done.
Yeah, I
next
did
question.
Well. It was great. Because
yes.
I can remember years before when my last iPhone I had, when I went to it, that option wasn't there then, because my older phone couldn't do that. I had a 7, and the 7 didn't have the capability. And then
yes.
my new one did. Now my new phone has that, which is great with the old phone. I can just link together and do that, and it's fantastic. And I like the way that you can just suddenly do that. They don't have to go to the cloud and log in, it does it all for you. And it's great. And I can see in the future, as we're using as this is happening, people are now really seeing the cloud more and more as a good thing and a bad thing, because they're using it every day. And the more you use it, the more you get used to it.
And this is where I think organizations who were previously cloud averse, and they were cloud averse largely for regulatory compliance reasons,
yeah,
are now seeing the true benefits of moving to the cloud. They've seen that their user population is completely au fait and happy in the cloud, that they understand how that environment works because they've been using it at home for years. And many of the areas for which organizations who were previously cloud averse were concerned, they've had those concerns alleviated and have now been able to transition to operating in the cloud almost without impunity and really sort of working very openly and successfully in the cloud.
Because to me, years ago, when you got new technology and you were trying to use it, like the internet first came along, people were still worried what can do and how do we use it, and didn't understand it. And every time we get new technology, they're still worried how it's going to work. And until we've got it in our hands, we're using it day in, day out, and we don't notice it's there, we're not going to get used to it.
Yes, with one word of caution. So as people become used to using the cloud and it becomes commonplace, then yeah, absolutely, technology can really move itself forward and organizations can move itself forward. The key, however, does go back to a point we touched on earlier, Ronan, where we have to educate the users. If users become complacent in the cloud, if they forget that there's risks, if they forget that it is distributed computing and it can have access anywhere, anytime, any place, and assets are lost, if assets are inappropriately used, then the benefits of the cloud, because of complacency actions from users, do become risks again. So absolutely, that normalization of use of smart computing and cloud computing does have significant advantages. But if complacency creeps in at the user population, if they're not appropriately trained, not just once at the start, but on an ongoing basis to remind them not to become complacent, then risks do reappear.
Because you mentioned in time, place, anywhere. To me, years ago, that was Martini. But now it's basically,
yes.
It's now basically, to me, it's part of the cloud. And I agree that over time, people might get complacent. But you see, because we're on the cloud, it's secure, that's it. But it's not. You got to make sure that your staff are always getting training. Like when you're working in a job, every couple of years, you'll get on the job training because things happen, things change. And if you're using new technology, like years ago when you were working in the factory and you're working in a factory and you're working in the floor and you were delivering stuff, you use a forklift. And then every couple of years, that machine would change. And as it changed, you had to be retrained at using. Same with the cloud. What it was years ago isn't what it is now. And you got to make sure your staff know that as the cloud adopts to what the environment we're in now, which is basically remote working, you got to be trained to do that. And then when we go to hybrid model, you got to be trained again to make sure that you can handle that as well.
So you do, but there's two sides to training. One is how the technology works, but
yeah.
The other side is how organizations want the technology to work. And this is where many organizations have struggled with the cloud and traditionally the risk averse ones, because what they've sought to do is to still embolden their previous security policies and controls and architectures and transition those into the cloud. And cloud can be a very elastic and forgiving environment. But if you take very brittle policies and very brittle architectures and try and force them rigidly onto an elastic capability, you actually break the benefits.
Yeah.
And you endanger the success of what you're trying to do. So in the same way as training has to evolve for new technologies so that people know how to use them, organizations have to evolve. They have to look at changing their policies. They have to bring them up to date. So the training can't just be about the new technology. It also has to be about the new policies, the new controls, and the new ways of working within that technology for it to be ultimately as successful as it could be.
You know, so you've got to make sure that the main flaw in anything right now is humans. And you've got to make sure that you have to understand, that and make sure that they're educated in a sense to make sure that flaw doesn't occur as much as it has in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's an often used phrase that, you know, problem exists between chair and computer.
Yeah.
You know, the user is often the problem. Because computers don't, by their own nature, create cybersecurity risks. People programming computers create cybersecurity risks. Yeah. So, or people using computers. Now, in the main, the vast majority of cybersecurity risks are not deliberate. They are the result of well-intentioned but misinformed users,
yeah,
or well-intentioned, misinformed, or, you know, developers who maybe have made small errors. So nobody intends to create a cybersecurity breach. And that, again, that's why the education is so important. And the right sizing of processes, policy, and controls are so important to ensure that those communities of users are emboldened to think about what is it we're trying to do, why are we trying to do it, and what's the benefit of following the appropriate routes rather than being well-intentioned but misinformed.
Yeah, because I think if you can make sure that, tell staff, these things do happen, but as long as we've got the policies in place and the education to make sure that in the future these things will happen, and if it does happen, not to worry about it, because at times if it happens, you're going to think it's all my fault, and you're going to get worried about it. Don't. Just make sure that it doesn't happen again and you're educated all the time on this. So whenever you introduce new policies or new technology, you make sure the staff know how it works, what it can do, how it integrates with the current policy, and why the current policy might have to change and modify slightly to take it into account as well.
Yeah, and you know, we also have to acknowledge that sometimes mistakes happen.
Yeah.
And when mistakes happen, the key for many organizations is not that the mistake has happened. It's not that the cyber breach has happened. I'm a firm believer there are two types of organization. The organization that has had a cybersecurity breach and knows it.
Yeah.
And the sort of organization who's had a cybersecurity breach and is yet to identify it.
Yeah.
And for me, when an organization has a cybersecurity breach, its response is actually key to how it protects its brand reputation. The organization who is open about it, who communicates effectively and puts in place effective response plans, is one that will recover quicker.
Yeah.
The organization who tries to hide it, doesn't declare it, doesn't really talk about it, maybe blames, you know, a few executives within their organization and puts the head on a pike and says, well, it wasn't our organizational fault, it was that person's fault. In my experience, is that actually the organization who takes longer to recover, that has more of a financial impact, not just on, you know, market capitalization, investor relations, and overall, you know, brand reputation, but also from a staff morale and welfare perspective. So one of the key things for me that, you know, unfortunately, cyber breaches do happen. When they do, don't automatically turn around to blame your staff. Ask the question, did we adequately train our staff? you know, was it something that was actually, could we have done more as an organization? So turning it into an introspective look in the mirror to say, could we have done more, is actually the more beneficial step, rather than simply trying to vilify individual users for what was more than likely a well-intentioned but misinformed mistake.
You're looking now at Facebook. I wonder how they're going to, what they're going to do to try and redeem their reputation after their big giant hack.
Yeah, it's always an interesting one when you look at these big hacks, and nobody truly knows what's going on. I'm sure it will wash out over time, and certainly will be one to watch in the future.
But for me, like, it was funny when they had Day Dump that said on Day Dump was Mark Zuckerberg's phone number. And when that happened, when it hits home and you get this well-known tech guy who did it online, then they realised we were in trouble.
Yeah, and this comes back to, you know, how many individuals have used cloud computing. And I think why education is so important to many people. Because GDPR has brought a renewed rigour and awareness to both organisations and individual consumers around data privacy. But it's not a global societal concern yet. In many areas, privacy is still not considered an absolute requirement. And people have openly been putting what could be concerned as, you know, private or sensitive data into the cloud without due consideration. And to me, you know, the Mark Zuckerberg phone number is an example of that.
Yeah.
Did he know that putting his phone number there was ever going to result in it being publicly forecast and published as a result of a breach? Probably not. But it will serve as a wake-up call to anybody else who is using these platforms, either as an individual consumer or as an organization, to consider, do we want to be doing that going forward? Do we want our data to be at risk of publication in the cloud if there was a breach to happen? So if it serves a purpose of reinforcing the need of that user education and awareness and careful consideration, then there may be benefits to that breach, you know, having demonstrated, you know, those controls being, you know, not being in place.
Well, it could be that will tell them your benefit, what you have is a flawed system, in that sense that when you fill in an online form to join this any of these cloud provider or any of these products like Facebook or Instagram, whatever it is, you're keying in details about your site, your phone number, things that shouldn't openly be shared. But somehow when it's online, that data is all lumped together and it's not seen as, that bit should not be seen, that bit should be seen. It's all put together in the one file.
Yes, and this is where we have to consider what the cloud has become. The cloud has become a complete societal ecosystem of data. And, you know, is data truly separate at any point? And I think if you were to look at all of the major breaches that have happened nowadays, that you can start to piece together jigsaws of individuals' lives.
Yeah.
And I think this is where, you know, certainly if you look at some of the new capability within Apple, and, you know, I talked about this on World Internet Day earlier this year. There's a great tip within Apple now when it looks at the passwords, that it actually starts to monitor, you know, some of the dark websites and paste bins and areas like that to say, have these user credentials been compromised and advertised in a data breach? And if they have, it actually proactively recommends you to go and change those passwords. And this is where, you know, we're starting to see the world waking up to the need to be proactive around these multiplicities of jigsaws that exist. Because a data breach on one company could actually result in giving away the data of another company because there is no siloed environment in the cloud. And I think that's the world we're evolving to nowadays.
And I guess also because you might use the same password and email address for more than one service.
Yes, and this is where you know the well-intentioned but misinformed user becomes key. You know, password complexity by its sheer nature means it's complex to remember all these passwords. And educating the user how to absolve themselves of that uniformity of access control, where whichever website, whichever service they're subscribing to, they always use the same username or the same password. Well, that just means the cyber criminal, the cyber attacker, only has to get lucky once to then be able to determine the access points for everything for that user. So whilst it may be difficult, you know, initially to consider, well, what are all the different passwords I need to create or how do I create different user credentials, it's necessary to avoid that complacency in user access control.
You know, for me, for example, at the moment on my Mac, if I go and I'm using Safari browser and I'm going to a new website and it wants me to join, it will recommend a password for me to do without me doing this and say, this is the wrong password. And it will save me in the cloud. So if, for example, I get a new computer or I'm viewing that same website on my iPhone, it knows it's me and knows basically this is Ronan. We know it's him. We can verify it's him. And I'm not actually keying this password, which is something that I won't remember in a million years because it's so complex. It's great having that.
Yeah, and the multi-layer, you know, multi-factor authentication that's provided by those areas where it combines a password with biometric security of, you know, for example, Face ID, creates significant advantages. How that moves across from the consumer world into the business world and the business adoption of cloud will be an interesting aspect to watch over the next, you know, months and years.
Because I'm thinking it's going to be a nice wild ride over the next 2 years as we're now moving more towards remote working. This is now going to be discussion that's going to be talked about more and more and more, not basically brushed away for another 3 years. It's going to be dealt with now because it has to be.
Yeah, the pace of change, and we've talked about this a number of times, Roland, is becoming absolute and, you know, a quicker turnaround than ever before. So I agree with you that, you know, this is not an area that we are going to be able as a profession or as organizations to sweep under the carpet. We're going to have to tackle this one head on and find a response to it.
And I'm sure the responses are going to be positive because people are going to realize we're all in this together.
Well, I would actually argue that people have realised that. You know, one of the things, certainly from people you know, I speak to and client-side conversations, is that COVID has refocused society in many aspects, both you know, within an individual organisation, but also societally, and that's at a global level as well. People are more aware nowadays of societal impact. People are more aware of the fragility of society. And I do believe that, you know, COVID has brought people together to recognize the need for common good.
Yeah. And I think in the future, that's going to be more important than ever. And on that note, that's a nice way to end the podcast. And I'd say thanks very much for being the podcast, Mark. Have a great day and good luck in the future. And Long may the cloud be something we can look at as a friend and not an enemy.
Yeah, totally agree. It's been great to have this discussion with you today, Ronan.
Yeah, thanks so much for that. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/IrishTechNews, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.